Hi, everybody. Alcoholic Paul Brenner. Aww. It's good to be here. It's good to be sober. Larry, thank you very much for inviting me. Trisha, thanks for coming down. Dave. He did pay for dinner, so I had to say something. Where's Mark V at? Mark, raise your hand. There he is in the back. Back. You know, we got lost on the way over here. I made a left when I should have made a right, and we ended up on Elkhorn Boulevard. And they're like, pull over, ask for directions. I don't ask for directions. Pull over, ask her. So I stopped. There was this woman standing on the corner on Elkhorn Boulevard, and I stopped, and I said, excuse me, can you tell me how to get here? And she goes, where's here? I go, well, it's an AA meeting. She goes, oh, are you a friend of Mark's? So there you go, buddy. You wanted me to talk about you. If you're new tonight, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sincere hope is that you can find in Alcoholics Anonymous what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. And really what I found is I found a level of acceptance and understanding for Paul that I never, ever, ever thought possible. I found the ability to live semi-comfortably probably, I don't know, 60, 70% of the time. I had the ability to get up in the morning and shave and not want to cut my throat. I've got the ability to come, go, do, and be that which I was incapable of doing before. I've got the ability to restore family relationships. I've got the ability to be somewhat of a citizen. So if you're new tonight, maybe I can string up some more hope throughout the next 40 minutes or so. But really, Alcoholics Anonymous has been by far the best thing that's ever happened to me. I want to thank the guys from La Mesa Men's that came to support me. You're killing me. It would have been so much easier to show up to a room full of people that didn't know me. My home group is La Mesa Men's. We meet on Friday night, and it's the best men's meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love that meeting. I love the guys in it. I love that, I'm going to quote a friend of mine, I love that they're able to love me and all my warts. I got warts. I did not like me when I got here. I despised me, and I'll get into more of that. I have a sobriety date. My current sobriety date is August the 12th of 2004. I've got a sponsor who's got a sponsor who I believe has got a sponsor, and I see those guys on Sunday mornings. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to be plugged into that and be current with those guys. I talk to my sponsor pretty regularly. I'd say almost just about every day. Congratulations to 1 year. All I have to say is the second year's a bitch. So stay close. If I'm lying, somebody, you can correct me after the meeting. I wore a jacket and tie out of respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life. It's given me a life. Without Alcoholics Anonymous, I am a pathetic, homeless tweaker, dumpster diving, building wallets out of duct tape, and looking for copper wire. It really, really amazes me that I would be the guy that Larry asked to come share for 40 minutes. Man, I've got this old idea about speakers in Alcoholics Anonymous, and still today, my head tells me that the guy at the podium, the person at the podium, is the person that has their shit the most together. That's why they asked them to come speak. That guy's got it going on. And, man, I got nothing going on. Nothing. I'm a mess. But fortunately today, my mess ebbs and flows. The tide is not nearly as high as it used to be. I talked about my current sobriety date. This is I got sober the first time in 1987, shortly after a drug bust at Patrick Henry High School. I'm no kingpin, man. I mean, I couldn't make money selling drugs because I would give it away. I mean, I had to give it to you so you would like me, and then I would come up short, and I'd try to get the guy to front me another something so I can do something. And the reality of high school was that I grew up in an alcoholic home. I had older brothers and sisters, and they did stuff, and they knew where to get stuff, so I knew where to get stuff, and I would take Larry's money, and I would take Dave's money, and I would take Trisha's money, and I would get three or four or five times what I told you I could get for your money, and I would give you yours, and I would have mine for free. And the San Diego Police Department did not appreciate me doing that on a high school campus. And thus was my first sobriety. Shortly before sentencing, I checked myself into rehab because I didn't want to go to jail. And I can get into that. I'm going to share what I was like, what's happened to me, and what I'm like today. I'm not going to tell you what I'm trying to be like, because what I'm trying to be like really doesn't matter, man. What am I doing? What am I like today? What does my life look like today? What does Paul Brenner look like at almost 10 years sober? Well, sometimes good, sometimes bad. It's a privilege to share my experience. It's especially comforting for me, or especially nice, or whatever the right word is, to do it this time of year. April, May, June, July, August, 10 years ago, that was my bottom. And it's great to be here with you, plugged in, sober, living life, and get to reflect on what those last 4 months of my drinking were like. And hopefully my ADD will allow me to get to that. I grew up feeling separate, different, and apart from. Out of the chute, nobody set me down, nobody told me, but I thought I was fat, I thought I was dumb, I thought I was ugly. One of my earliest childhood memories was I was 6, 7, and we were on a family vacation at some aunt or uncle's house, and I came out of the shower in my underoos or my tidy whities. I want to see what underoos look like. And there was a full length mirror, and I caught my reflection in the mirror, and I looked, and I thought, oh my God. You look like a chicken. And I pushed my stomach out as far as I could, and I sucked my chest back in, and I stared at that reflection in the mirror, and I knew nobody was ever going to love me. I knew. All right. If I wasn't married, I'd want her number. I can work with that. So I don't know how or why, you know, but I was convinced. Somewhere in the literature, it talks about being maladjusted to life and in full flight from reality. And for me, I believe that is the simplest, most basic expression or example I can give you of my being maladjusted to life. I just didn't fit. I didn't belong. There was something wrong with me, and I knew it. I'd like to give you an example of being full flight from reality. I don't know. Details are going to screw it up. But some 16, 18 years ago, I am just tweaking my... You know what's off, and I'm down in Mission Bay with my sister and her connection, and I don't know why we're out hunting seashells at low tide at 2 o'clock in the morning, but I'm out there combing the beach looking for seashells with a flashlight, and I find a really, really cool flashlight that's going to impress the connect, and I run up and I give it to her. She's like, "Oh, that's great! That's the one I want. I need some more of those." Okay, man, I'm on it. Well, honest to God, the sun came up at Mariner's Point, and I'm in a hole with a flashlight in my mouth, and these guys are showing us to play volleyball, and I'm like, dude, what's going on? And I look up at the flashlight in my mouth, and I'm like, oh my God, I got to get out of here. If that's not full flight from reality, I'm really, really not sure what is. You know, I identify as an alcoholic because I suffer from alcoholism. Alcohol worked for me. I experienced a sense of relief, the ease and comfort the book talks about when I drank alcohol almost until the very last day. There's a lot of drugs to my story. I did a lot of drugs. If that offends you, my hope is that you'll get over it. If not, maybe you can talk to your sponsor and write about it or do whatever you need to do. But I'm a garbage pail. I mean, I don't care what it takes to change me because I don't like me. And if you told me broken shards of glass would do the trick, I'd probably have an experience so I could tell you about stitches and sutures and broken shards of glass. I told you I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I don't think my alcoholic home was any different than yours. It was ugly. It was ugly. I mean, I grew up knowing what it sounded like, you know. Flesh hitting flesh and mom screaming and kids running in separate rooms. And I remember early on, I had taken the little clown act. I mean, there's one memory I have, a little top hat and a cane. I was trying to put on a show to get dad to quit beating mom. And that's just what it was. And we left my biological father, and we got a stepdad, and it was really the same thing again. Why it's important for me to tell you that or share that with you is so you understand that it happened to me too, and I'm here now, and I'm able to lead a productive life. But I swore that was not going to be me. In fact, I'm not going to drink. And I'm going to treat my alcoholism with something else. And I did that for a while. As an adolescent, it was easier for me to get other things than it was alcohol. I didn't have the wonderful experience with alcohol that I had until that last really 4 months I was talking about a few minutes ago. I told you I got sober the first time in 1987 because I didn't want to go to jail. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous at 17 the first time. And Tom will testify if you want to talk to him later. I was a cocky, arrogant little son of a bitch, without a doubt. At 21, I had 4 years sober. And there was not many 4 years sober 21-year-olds in 1991. And I knew it. And really what happened... At 21, I looked around Alcoholics Anonymous, and it wasn't giving me what I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for. You understand? I want a nice car. I want a cute girl. I want to get laid. And I want to get laid again. And I want to get laid again. And it's not happening. I am out of here. I'm going to go drink in the bars. And I'm going to get me, you know. Anyway, I need to really hammer on that point. I took a drink in October of 91 or something, and up to that point, I had ran with a sponsorship group in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had reaped all the benefits of being sober. I had a job. I had my own place to live. I had a little car. I was doing okay. Was even going back to adult school to get my GED. I took a drink in October, and by January, I was living in the back of that Ford Ranger with a camper shell. That's what my drinking does. And we had some goofy ceremonial drink where I threw my four-year token off the OB pier, and me and my buddy shaking our fist at those effers in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, screw you, screw you, screw you. And what happens, man? I mean, I'm a pathetic tweaker on the streets, and a couple years went by, and I got picked up, and I didn't want to go to jail again. There wasn't much to talk about. They were taking me to jail anyway. And I got out of jail, and what was I going to do? What was I going to do? I guess I got to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I really treated it the same way. You know, I'm just... I don't think I got a sponsor until I was a couple years sober, but I got plugged in with a really, really active group. We were going to Pacific Group once a month. I was taking the steps. Life got really, really good. Sponsors take a bad rap in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I hear a lot of, and I probably said it myself, a lot of, you know, well, that's not in the book. How can you tell me to do that? You know, and I had a sponsor that was really focused on a much more important demonstration lies before us. And at a couple years sober, he was not going to let me drive on a suspended license. He was not going to let me not have a job. And he gave me some simple direction about getting a job. And if you've heard this story before, I apologize. But I called him. He didn't call me. I call him one day. He's all, hey, what's going on? I said, oh, nothing. You know, I'm blah, blah, blah doing this. He goes, you get a job? I'm like, yeah, I got a job. Well, what are you doing? I'm house sitting. Dummy, house sitting is not a job. Yeah, it is. They're paying me, you know. And what he had me do was really quite simple. He said, what's the last industry you worked in when you had a job? And mind you, I'm like 2.5 years sober. And I told him, he goes, okay, they got a phone book where you're house sitting? They did. So I got the phone book. He goes, okay, open it up to that part in the, what is it, Yellow Pages, right? That has the pictures? Yeah. I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, for sure. I'll try and make this brief. He said, okay, you got to open that section. Now close your eyes. Put your finger on the page. Now, this is stupid, but okay, I put my finger on the page. He goes, you got one? I go, yeah. He goes, now call him. I hung up the phone. So I called him. I called him back and said, yeah, they're not looking for anybody. He said, I don't care. Go there anyway. Ask him, you fill out an application. And make a long story short, through sponsorship direction, this company ended up hiring me because I kept doing what the sponsor said. I get there and I'm feeling separate, different, and apart from. I don't fit, I don't belong. It's a construction kind of thing, and you got to get there early, and there's all these construction guys with they got tools, and I got no tools, and they know what they're doing, and I don't know what I'm doing, and I don't fit, and I don't belong, and I'm just freaking out, coming out of my skin. I got a call time, and I call him, and I'm telling him I'm freaking out. And he goes, well, what are you doing? You know, basically, I'm standing there with my hands in my pockets, feeling separate, different, and apart from. And he says, they got trucks? They got to have trucks, right? I go, yeah, they got trucks. He goes, you know how to check the oil? Yeah, of course I know how to check the oil. He goes, fine. It's now your job every day when you get there to check the oil on all the trucks. So I start checking the oil, and labor superintendent comes out. He's like, hey, what are you doing on my trucks? Sorry, sir, I'm just checking the oil. You know, I was here early, and I thought I could check the oil. So this goes on for a couple days. He sees me continue to do it. Next thing you know, I'm in charge of fleet maintenance. Right? So I get done doing the fleet maintenance. I call a sponsor up. I'm freaking out. I don't fit. I don't belong. Blah, blah, blah. He's all, well, okay, how long does it take you to do that? I go, oh, about, you know, 2-5 minutes, whatever. You know, I mean, I'm a smart guy. I created a log, and if there's oil in this truck today, there's going to be oil in it tomorrow. I can skip that for a couple of days. And anyway, so what happened through sponsorship direction? I went from being a laborer to in charge of fleet maintenance to shop foreman to running out-of-town work. And we're plugged in. We're going to Vegas a couple times a week. We would drive to Vegas on school nights and support part of our group that was taking a cake or speaking or something, and then come back and go to work the next day. It was just crazy, crazy, crazy Alcoholics Anonymous. And life is getting really good. I'm excelling through this company. I'm making more money than I ever made. My lifelong dream girl has reappeared in my life, and I'm dating her. And I turn to that sponsor, and I turn to the three guys I'm sponsoring, and I say, hey, look, essentially, I have learned much from what you have to offer. The bottom line is I can't do what you do in Alcoholics Anonymous and have this life. We're going to get married. She's pregnant. I there's just no time for me to do this. Thanks. I got it. I got it. I'm not going to do what I did before. And this is a great experience for me. Maybe you'll identify with it, maybe you won't. But what I got to experience that next year and a half before I took a drink is the reality that for Paul Brenner, his behavior varies not when he's not doing Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't matter if I'm drunk or if I'm sober. I still behave at my lowest common denominator. And my lowest common denominator is selfish, self-seeking, self-centered, all those character defects. I want my way, and if you don't do it my way, I'm going to put my hands around your throat, and I'm going to effing choke you. So what happened, a year and a half of not drinking after 5 years active in AA, I got her in a stranglehold, and we're playing tug-of-war over a baby because she, I don't know, put mayonnaise on the wrong side of the bread or put a knife in the dishwasher painting facing up instead of facing down or something. I mean, just something. I mean, I got some little idiosyncrasies. So I find us playing tug-of-war with my now... with one of my daughters. And actually, that didn't freak me out. I was okay with that. Let me tell the truth here. What ended up happening was that she loaded the kid in the car and they start to drive away. And you know, I don't know if there's any other tough guys here in the room tonight. I pick on women and children. But then afterwards, when I'm feeling all that guilt and that remorse and that shame and feeling like shit, I like to punch and break things. And if I break a knuckle or if I bleed, it's all the better. So as the car is driving away, all I can do is I turn and I reach and I punch. And I'm not paying attention to what I punch, but I punch the passenger window of the Jeep as it drove by. Well, on the other side of the glass was a 2-year-old in the car seat. Yeah, man, that's pretty effed up. Sober. I haven't taken a drink yet. So I'm not sure what your life looks like without Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what my life looks like. And I wish I could tell you that was the bottom. But that was just the beginning of the bottom. The real bottom was the career, the path that sponsorship direction put me on, the nice truck, the white picket fence, the trophy wife, the beautiful daughter, would get taken to a parking lot in South Mission Beach for whatever. When I end up homeless, I mean, if you're gonna be homeless in San Diego, you might as well do it at the beach. We've lost the house, we've lost the career, the truck's up for repossession. I got a $200 travel trailer I picked up somewhere, and I'm trying to convince her that we're not homeless. It's June, we're at the beach. This is vacation, and I haven't done any speed since April, so that's not the problem. Right? I mean, I'm just drinking, smoking weed, and taking prescription pills because I herniated a disc somewhere somehow, and I blamed it on work, and I've cleaned that up. So this leads you to my new bottom, or the last bottom. And one more time, I asked her to do something, and she said no, and I got to put my hands around her throat. And we were in another parking lot, and somebody heard her scream, and they called the cops, and the cops came, and her and the girls went one way, and I went another way, and I found myself back in county jail. And this time there was nobody to call. There was nothing to do. It was mine to sit in and experience. And the first day I was there, it was all her fault. The second day I was there, I was inventorying. You know, there's a fifth of vodka underneath the sink. There's some pills or whatever there. I got some money. I can get this. I can do that. The third day was the reality of, oh my God. I don't know how. You've all been in jail. Most all, well, I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'm going to say, I don't know how many of you have been in jail. I don't know how many of you, especially the guys, were stupid enough to listen to the jailhouse attorneys in jail. But, I mean, there was a bunch of people telling me what I needed to do and how I needed to do it. And this guy, I could connect with him, and he could get me, you know, some of this. And it just smacked me in the face of, like, oh, my God, Brenner, what do you do? What are you doing? What does your life look like when you're running it? This is as good as it's going to get. And I knew that when they OR'd me, I needed to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was fortunate enough that I got to go to a dog obedience class for a year and do some other things. Domestic violence training. Or, I'm sorry, domestic violence prevention or whatever it was. Yeah, I mean, I joke about it, and it's not funny. It's horrific. And you know. You know, but that's where my alcoholism led me, and that's where I ended up, and that's what I did. I terrorized a beautiful woman and two little kids. Homeless and justifying and rationalizing, it's not me and it's not them. So I get out of jail, and I know. I got to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I think they OR'd me like 2 a.m. on a Wednesday morning, and I'm a tough guy. I said that earlier. I called Mom. Can I come sleep on your floor? Can I come sleep on your couch? And I was serious, and she let me. And make a long story short, there was a cheesy little big book study on Wednesday night that meets at the same meeting that Over the Bridge meets on, or the same place Over the Bridge meets on. And I knew I had to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went there, and they weren't doing it right. They weren't doing it right. I mean, they weren't. The coffee wasn't ready yet. They weren't set up. There was no donuts. Nobody greeted me. You know, there was some goofy, overweight, disheveled, bearded guy with, like, just crusty looking. He didn't look clean. And he was sitting there reading the Bible. You don't read a Bible in AA. What the f*** is wrong with you? This is not what Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to look like. So I pull up a chair, and the guy looks over his glasses, and he sees me, and he closes his Bible, and he walks over and he sits down next to me. He says, "You look new." Said, "Come on, really? Really? You're going to do that to me? Really?" And what happened was, is this guy that didn't meet any of my standards welcomed me back to Alcoholics Anonymous and told me it was okay to be here. Super powerful stuff. I'm coming back, and I know you're going to judge me, and I know you're going to kick me out, and I know you're, you know, I know. And he crushed it right out of the chute. I wish I could tell you I was on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. I really wasn't. I mean, for the first year, it was about doing whatever I needed to do to get that family back, get that relationship back. I had the domestic violence. I had a sponsor. I had individual counseling. I had a parenting class. And what else? I mean, I was just doing, you know, I totally had an agenda. And it wasn't, I'm going to really screw it up to try and get all the details on the time because I don't remember the dates. It just doesn't seem that important now. But what ended up happening was, things weren't going my way. I wasn't getting what I wanted. I had conned her into to going to a marriage counselor, even though I'd been served divorce papers. We're in this one particular marriage counseling session, and she's crying, relating the experience of the guy. And the guy's like, "Yeah, I would cry too if you did that. I understand why you don't want to be with him. You got to leave her alone." I'm like, "No, not you too. That's the same thing the sponsor said." So what are you saying? It's like, I don't understand how I can make any clear. Leave her alone. You know, it sounds like you moved yourself into her townhouse one sock at a time. Well, no, I'm paying for it. It's my townhouse. Yeah, I don't care. Get out. And it was kind of a jumping off place for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. What was I going to do? I came back to AA for what? Yeah, initially I think I wanted to get sober. I knew I didn't want to go back to jail. But more importantly, I had that idea of what I looked like and what a family looked like and what I wanted back, and it wasn't coming my way. And I was at a crossroads, and I made a decision that, okay, for the next year, I'll put that on the back burner. And I'll do Alcoholics Anonymous for the sake of doing Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got as busy as I can get. I'm pretty lazy. But I got busy with a sponsor, and I started taking the steps, and I had a real profound experience with the fifth step, and sharing who and what I thought Paul Brenner was, and coming to some new ideas about the reality. And for me, the reality for me today is that I am a flawed human being. That's it. It's as good as I'm going to get, human being. Now, alcohol has an adverse effect on me. Alcohol doesn't affect me the way it affects other people. And I've got these character defects that that I will go to great lengths to protect and get my way. That didn't sound very profound. But it was a new idea for me that I could just be one of God's kids. I spent my life looking at you going, yeah, there's a God for you. I get it. But there's not one for me. I mean, he can love you. I'm down with you. I'm down with him loving you. But he's not going to love me. You don't understand the things I've done. So I got to do AA, and I leave them alone. I get a little hung up here because I don't want my story or my sharing my experience with you or to try and tell you that Alcoholics Anonymous is about getting your family back, or Alcoholics Anonymous is about getting this or that. For me, Alcoholics Anonymous is I'll be sober 10 years if I make it August, and that's never happened to me before. Alcoholics Anonymous is about giving me back a chance at life. Alcoholics Anonymous is about giving me some little minute connection with a power greater than myself, being plugged into something bigger than me that I was never capable of doing before. I didn't fit. I didn't belong. It just so happens that in the course of doing that, my relationship with my family has been restored. Carrie and I were remarried, I think, in about 5 years, and we're raising kids in a little house out in Lakeside. And these kids know Alcoholics Anonymous. These kids know the Alcoholics Anonymous members. These kids are honor roll students, and you wouldn't know it looking at them. Now, that's my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not saying that that's what it looks like to be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, or I'm trying to say that that's your experience. And I apologize that I don't know if you can tell, I'm so freaking nervous about, you know, worried that I'm going to convey some message to you that that's what happens in AA, and it's not. The truth is that AA allows me to come, go, do, and be. I fit at La Mesa Men's. I fit where I didn't fit before. It bums me out that I got so hung up on that. Right? Yeah, no problem. Right? Move on. I'm grateful for the guys in my life today. I have, was it Verizon or somebody has their five? Man, I got like 15. I have never been so plugged in. And they're guys that I talk to on a regular basis. My phone's busy. My phone's busy. That's going to be the shortest 45-minute talk ever. How much time I got? About another 20 minutes? About 15 minutes. Perfect. Perfect. I can do 15 minutes. Since I've been sober this last 10 years, God, the whole life has changed. And again, I'm worried in my head. I'm racing up here that I'm going to tell you that Alcoholics Anonymous is about getting a job, or Alcoholics Anonymous is about getting a family. And Alcoholics Anonymous is about staying sober. I've never been sober 10 years. I've never been able to do this. If you're new, find yourself a group. Get plugged in. Get a sponsor. Do what the sponsor has to say. And, I mean, great things are going to come to pass. I should get it. I screwed it up by getting already. It's killing me. It's killing me. I got, we were at a convention a couple years back out in Vegas, and I ran into one of the guys that I was with that sponsorship group, and when we were going to Pacific Group and whatnot, and he says, "Hey, will you come speak at our Thursday meeting?" I'm like, yeah, sure. Sure, I'll come speak at your Thursday meeting out here in Vegas. Yeah. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh, my God, I got to drive to Vegas on a school night and speak at a meeting. And, yeah, okay, I'll do it. He goes, all right, well, I'll call and we'll work it out. So he gives me a call, and he says, yeah, well, we're going to fly you out. And now I'm freaking out that I am not the guy you fly to speak anywhere. And So they flew me out to Vegas. They put me up in a hotel room, and it was, God, there must have been 1,000 people there. Maybe there was 100, but it felt like there was 1,000. And it was the longest 45 minutes of my life and 100 other people. I made the mistake. I had about $2 in change in my pocket. I'm up there rattling the change. Oh, my God. You think I'm sweating now? It was terrible then. You know, at almost 10 years, my life is very, very full. We got 2 biological daughters, and about 2 years ago, we were blessed with the opportunity to get guardianship of my wife when she was in the battered woman shelter and then transitional housing. Met this family, this woman and her 3 kids, and you know how we get contemporaries. You know, you get running buddies. This was this woman was a running buddy of hers. She was single, going through a divorce with 2 kids, and this other woman was kind of in the same strait. So they buddied up and they were running around, and they were doing the other program, which is fine by me. I got no problem with that, man. Wherever you go to get it, go get it. And so Kari and this woman connected, and we watched them over the years. And I don't know, 7-8 years, they're doing the same old thing. Kari gets word that they're somewhere in Phoenix. She's living with a heroin dealer, and it's not a good scene for the kids. And God bless my wife, man. She is good people. She is good people. She finds out, and she jumps in the car at 4 o'clock on a Saturday morning, drives to Phoenix, puts them all, drives them back to San Diego, and puts them in our house. Our house is an Alcoholics Anonymous house. We're blessed with having more than we need, and we get to share it with new people, and in the case of my, you know, families. So to make a long story short, we bring them back. Kari finds a shelter, and they're set to go there, and they're all walking out the door. And when these kids showed up at our house, they had crates, literally, like the old plastic milk crates. They didn't have any luggage or anything, no pillow, no blanket, no nothing. And the oldest one is walking out the door and says, "You can take me to Polinsky Center. I'm not doing another shelter." And I grab Kari and I say, "Hey, can we do something?" And Kari approached her and said, "Hey, you know, we just got her enrolled in school here. Why don't you let her stay here?" Make a long story short, at the time, 15-year-old girl gets to stay with us, and we're doing visitation with her mom, visiting her, and it's getting ugly. And we petitioned the state for guardianship, and sat in a courtroom with this woman. And the judge was not very kind, and gave us guardianship. And what Alcoholics Anonymous looks in my life, what Alcoholics Anonymous looks like in my life, is a safe house and a restored family. My kids aren't growing up watching the same things that I watched. My kids aren't limited to the same hellish experience, man, that I went through. And I've told you by example, you know, my own experience, that without Alcoholics Anonymous, that's not what I look like. I'm incapable of behaving that way. And now, as a result of being plugged into Alcoholics Anonymous, not only do I get to better the lives of my kids, but there was somebody else. It amazes me the absolute lack of reservation that I had in taking on that opportunity. There was no thought of braces, no thought of college tuition, no thought of cars, no thought of insurance. I mean, I don't care. I'm in. I'll do it. And it's paid off dividends. You know, the truth about where our lives are today is that this is what our life looks like as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe I can get off that soapbox, and I'm worried I'm going to tell you that if you do Alcoholics Anonymous, this is what you're going to get. I can't promise you what you're going to get. Actually, I can. Absolutely, unequivocally. I can promise you will get exactly what you came to Alcoholics Anonymous for. I just hope that somewhere along the way you can come to Alcoholics Anonymous to stay sober. Otherwise, your experience is going to be like my first 2. To share what we have, I'm dumbfounded. I'm stammied, stymied, whatever the word is, because this isn't the life that happens to me. Paul Brenner doesn't look like that. Paul doesn't show up to work. Paul doesn't call a sponsor. Paul doesn't have guys that call him. Paul doesn't look at a phone list and say, "Who hasn't been at the meeting in a while? We need to call that guy." Paul doesn't look at his home group and say, "What can I do to make it better?" There's strife. Oh, and I'm glad I got time to do this. I am super Whatever, I feel stupid saying that. I'm impressed. You guys have a great meeting. Alcoholics Anonymous is alive and well in Allied Gardens on Saturday night, and you guys are doing a good job. Right? Give yourself a hand. Yeah. To be at a spot in Alcoholics Anonymous where your meeting can look like your meeting, and it doesn't have to look like my meeting, and to recognize and understand that Alcoholics Anonymous takes many different forms and carries itself to many different people many different ways. If you're like I was for a long time, hung up on Alcoholics Anonymous is done this way, and if you're not doing it this way, you're doing it wrong. I feel sorry for you. Yeah, I've been there. I've been there. If anything, I've been an example of what not to do in Alcoholics Anonymous or what doing Alcoholics Anonymous wrong looks like. From my own experience, you don't have to do it perfectly. You only have to do it. My fifth step, when I look at it now, I've got a guy, we're going through the steps, and we were doing his fifth step, Monday or Tuesday night or something, and I like to take my fifth step with me so I can share with them. You know, look, yeah, dude, right here, same thing, dog, peanut butter, right? Yeah, all about it, yeah. I did it, yeah, it's cool, no big deal. All of La Mesa Men's was waiting for that. And the great thing about that is it doesn't have any power on me. Right? You know, today the only thing I'm worried about is by saying it will put somebody off. It might make somebody uncomfortable. There might be a woman in the room that would be uncomfortable by my sharing what a goofy little kid I was. But other than that, it has no power. It has no control over me. I shared that stuff with my sponsor. We talked about it. He laughed. I cried, and we got beyond it. God, I totally lost my. It's that water bottle that does it. I pick it up and pew, squirrel. I believe I was on some kind of soapbox that Alcoholics Anonymous works regardless of what I, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, think. I had another great experience early on in this sobriety that when I was with that marriage counselor, the guy was telling me, there's something going on with you. I can't figure it out. I go, yeah, it's cool, dude. I'm alcoholic. I'm a little twisted. He goes, no, I think maybe there's a little PTSD, maybe there's a little something else. Would you be willing to go see a psychiatrist? Right? He was a psychologist, go see a psychiatrist. I'm like, nah, dude, I ain't going to see no psychiatrist. I do AA. I don't take no, what do you call them? Whatever, psych meds. I got AA and I got God and it's going to work. And the guy challenged me. He says, really, AA is everything? That's all you need? You sure? You don't, you know, you got all the answers? All right. So he sets up his appointment. I go see this guy, and he gives me, I'm not smart enough to remember the names of the tests, but there's like three tests. And I took the three tests. And there was there's like a curve or a barometer or some kind of thing that if you answer a specific number, you know, like 7 out of 10, then you qualify for this diagnosis, or 9 out of 10 qualifies you for this diagnosis. And on all three of them, I kid you not, I missed each one by one. So the guy said, you know, hey, really, I can't diagnose you. Here's some literature. Take it home. You know, you can check it out and make a determination for yourself. And what I decided for myself was that I was going to stick with Alcoholics Anonymous. My point to that is, I'm not a doctor. I spent some time with one once. But it goes along the line of what doing Alcoholics Anonymous right looks like. I can't tell you what it looks like for you. I can tell you what it looks like for me. And what it looked like for me was I was honest with the guy, really honest. And I asked him, before we get started, can I have 5 minutes? I want to tell you the best I can my story in 5 minutes. And then we'll take your test. And I walked away from there not needing any psych meds. I have no doubt that the chemicals I put in my body and all the things I did and my thought process, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, worked. I have no doubt that I probably came here with a chemical imbalance. I probably came here with any myriad of diagnoses. My experience is that I was honest with somebody and that wasn't what I needed to do. If you're new and you're wondering and you're not quite sure, I think there's a line in my book, something about solitary self-appraisal. works out, maybe take a sponsor or somebody close to you with you, and find out for yourself. But don't the Big Book claims that we don't have the answer to everything, and if that's what you need to do, then by all means go do it. Go get the help you need. But do not do like I've done in the past, where I don't need Alcoholics Anonymous. The only way my life has gotten better, and I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again in this pitch, is by doing Alcoholics Anonymous and being a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's it, man. That's all I got. Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life. It can change yours, too, if you come do it. Thanks, Larry. I appreciate it.